You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, July 13th. Put down your Pokemon Go game and tune in for the next couple of hours. No guest today, so we'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. If you've got anything on your mind, maybe the memorial service yesterday in Dallas to honor the five slain officers. Last two occupants of the Oval Office spoke. Former President George W. Bush and current President Obama, and gave some words, both extensively quoting scripture. Maybe we'll talk about that just a little bit today, but maybe your thoughts on that. Also, get to a topic I only started wading into yesterday, and that were some remarks by Archbishop Charles Chaput from the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that he gave about a year and a half ago on the state of our culture, the decline of faith, what our response should be, and I'll also connect that in with Cosmopolitan magazine somehow, so you'll have to hold on to understand where I'm coming from on that one. Also, Pope Francis gets a new spokesman, and he's an American, so we'll talk about that. Also, the illusion of some evangelical conversions and getting to know the prophet of the week, you know, all through the scripture readings, as we talked about the last couple of weeks. We've had a different prophet during this sort of season in the readings during the daily mass, in which the first reading is from an Old Testament prophet. This week's prophet of choice is Isaiah, and we'll get into what he's about later in the show today. We'll also spin the Dalek Catechism wheel, give our What Were You Thinking awards, and look back in history, all that and more coming up on the program today. Again, if you want to chime in, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Mike Allen Show, the handle. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. Hope you had a good rest of the day after I left you yesterday. I made a drive last night to beautiful Hazard, Kentucky. This is not the double Z Hazard of Boss Hogg and the Duke Boys fame, driving the General Lee. That was in fictional town in Georgia. Hazard is a real-life town in Perry County, Kentucky. It's nestled right in some of the most beautiful parts of the Appalachian Mountains. Really a gorgeous drive. It's the closer you get to Hazard, kind of a windy road, really, really lush. I think we've had a lot of rain here this year, so the greenery, the trees, just really, really pretty. So that was a nice, even though I did I fell asleep driving there yesterday. Not good. After that little incident, I was pretty wide awake the rest of the drive down. For some reason, I have a harder time staying awake driving like in the late afternoon, early evening than I do late at night. Coming back last night, which I got back around 11, didn't risk it. Got my surefire antidote to vehicular sleepiness, and that is a pack of sunflower seeds. I don't know what it is, but having a wad of sunflower seeds in my cheek, shelling them, and pardon the grossness, spitting the shell into a cup, it's just enough mental stimulant when I'm driving to keep me awake. You should try it sometime. Coffee doesn't really do the trick when I'm that exhausted. Or anything else. It's sunflower seeds. So anyway, I know you were worried about me, so just to let you know, I got back safely last night. This ain't no tape. And I credit it to sunflower seeds, even though they didn't have the good ones, you know, the David brand. That's the one I like. And don't give me none of these flavored sunflower seeds. I just want the plain old regular David sunflower seeds. I had to settle for Frito-Lay last night, and my apologies if anyone listening works for the Frito-Lay company. You have a lot of great products. Just sunflower seeds. David's got you beat on that. And they're not even endorsing the program, so that's all for free. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. I didn't get to see the memorial service yesterday in Dallas. A remarkable event. Really glad that the President of the United States decided to go. Of course, George Bush, who is a resident of Texas and former governor, was there and spoke as well. George W. Bush's remarks, short of the president's a more lengthy address. He's taken a few hits for that. But then again, what isn't he taking hits for? It seems like in this partisan age that we live in. But one of the things that struck me immediately, really about both speeches, and I had a chance to look over both speeches last night and this morning, both extensively quoting scripture. Now, I take that as a real positive. I mean, one of the things that's often talked about in our very secularized or increasingly secularized age is that we're losing our Christian memory. Any sense of the foundational ideas and the common vocabulary of the faith that has knit us together, not necessarily per se as a Christian nation, but as a nation where the large majority of citizens are Christians. And hearkening back to a day when the language of Scripture was more well-known and more interwoven into our discourse and our oratory than it is today. But both President Bush and President Obama quoting Scripture really throughout their talks, really President Obama even more. George W. Bush quoting the Apostle Paul from his first letter to Timothy, "For God gave us a spirit of not of fear, but of strength and love and self-control." Now, President Bush also talking about being made in the image of God. Another not directly scriptural remark, but certainly rooted in the Judeo-Christian witness. It seems like there was one other scripture I'm not seeing right off the top of my head that he shared yesterday in his talk as well. Now, President Obama, computer came unplugged. Hold on one second. I'll have to look at President Obama's talk here in a minute when I get my computer rebooted back up. But he quoted several times, began with scripture. Really began with, I believe, let's see, Romans chapter 5. Let me pull open my handy New Testament here. But Romans chapter 5, which talks about some of the things we talked about at the beginning of the show yesterday, about the purpose of how God can use suffering in our life. Romans chapter 5, more than that, we rejoice in our sufferings. This is the words of St. Paul beginning in verse 3. More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And then there were several other instances throughout his, I think, about 40 to 45 minute long speech. That's, like I said, for those who were wont to criticize, that was one of the criticisms levied against the president, is that perhaps he got in helicopter mode where he didn't know how to land on the tarmac. I read the speech. I haven't heard it delivered, but I didn't get that sense from it at all. I thought, considering the gravity and the difficulty of the setting, I mean, the fact that the president was in Dallas to mourn and to grieve the loss of five police officers, and yet he there, as an undeniable fact, as a president, the first president of African-American heritage, to be in this climate right now in which there is this great tension in our country, racial tension, involving particularly the relationship between African-Americans and the police departments across this country, the protests. He had to say something. He had to make this, yes, about the slain officers, but he had to deal with the larger issue of race. This has been something that he's dealt with at various times throughout his presidency, he being the first African-American president. It was a needle he had to try to thread, and I thought he did so very ably, I'll be honest with you, in the speech. As I said, I've got plenty of disagreements with our president, But I thought yesterday, his speech, given the gravity of the circumstances, it was a home run. I mean, really, I thought both speeches, both the former President Bush and President Obama, were home run speeches. And really, what I think part of what made both of them great were the fact that they appealed unashamedly to biblical scriptural ideas about hope in the midst of suffering. And so, like I said, I think we do, you know, we spend a lot of time, and it's not that we don't have evidence for it, hand-wringing about the decline of the culture and of our Christian memory, but when we see something like this, when we understand that when we as a people have to dig down deep to find the resources to be able to walk through and to cope with such hard things, that there's still the understanding, I think, that those riches really are found most significantly in the witness of Holy Scripture. And, you know, and one of the things that I thought was remarkable, I think this was true about, again, President Bush's speech and also President Obama's, is in the spirit and the mode of the biblical prophets, their call was, again, an invitation to us, not so much to some sort of new ideal or new concept of what our country should be, but like the prophets, calling us to live out the very ideals that we espouse. I mean, that's the work of the prophet right there. Live up to what you say you believe. More when we come back from the break. If you've got a comment on that, 5734BREAD4. We'll be back with a question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show. Anyway, got my computer booted back up here, so I could browse other things, but so I could look at the president's speech, basically, from yesterday. As I said, he began with some scripture taken from Romans. Scripture tells us that in our sufferings there's glory, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. A little bit later in the speech, let me see what it was that he quoted, because I know he quoted more scripture as he went along throughout. And this, I'm sure, let's see, we'll find it as we go down here. Finding the vocabulary as a country to talk about these sorts of things with the words of hope, it's, again, interesting that we continue to turn back to Scripture. And I kind of doubt that you're going to see any ACLU protests, but you never know, right? Let's see. Well, I'll find it here in a minute. Long speech, as I've said, but I know there was at least two or three other instances in which he quoted Scripture in the speech, so we'll get back to that. Anyway, my question of the day here on Breadbox Media is, it is Harrison Ford's 74th birthday today. 74 years old for Mr. Han Solo / Indiana Jones. My question is, what is your favorite Harrison Ford character that he's portrayed in film? Could be, you know, one of his roles that he played in a series of films like Indiana Jones or Han Solo, or maybe he just played it once. What would you say would be your favorite Harrison Ford role? And then kind of conversely, what would be your least favorite? He's not a lot. I don't think he's made a lot of bad movies. I mean, maybe a few. And there's some that I have not seen. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. You can also post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Some Facebook comments we've gotten. Andy says, favorite Indiana Jones, least favorite in Working Girl. I think he was in that with, was that Sigourney Weaver and Melanie Griffith? Never saw that one. Tom says, favorite John book in Witness. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. And surprisingly, on the link I put on Facebook where somebody had listed his top 10 characters, at least according to their opinion, they put John Book from the film Witness in at number 8, which, boy, that seems low to me. I love that movie, Witness. I think it may be my favorite Harrison Ford film, where he plays the Philadelphia cop who has to go live in the Amish community, gets shot, and he's taking care of Kelly McGillis and her little boy. The little boy witnesses a murder. It's got Danny Glover in it as well. That is some kind of movie, and he plays that role so perfectly. Yes, I agree with you, Tom. I'll say John Book is my favorite. He says, least favorite, Richard Kimball in The Fugitive, because Tommy Lee Jones stole the show. Interesting. I think you got a valid point there. David says, favorite, Han in The Empire Strikes Back. Least, Linus in Sabrina. See, that was a remake, I think. I did not see Sabrina. Todd says, I'd like to say Rick Deckard. That's from Blade Runner. But really, Deckard was just Indiana Jones set in the not-so-distant future. So I guess number one has to be Indy. Digging deep for an honorable mention, Joe Gavilan, the harried police detective, real estate agent in Hollywood Homicide, Todd says. I haven't seen many considered bad ones, but I thought he was weak in The Frisco Kid. Last one, Mark, our seminarian slash film buff. Mark says, Indiana Jones has to be the best. There's a reason Raiders of the Lost Ark was nominated for so many Oscars, including Best Picture and Director back in 81. Wow, I didn't realize Raiders was nominated for Best Picture. It is a great film. Indy is one of those characters who will withstand time, he says. Least favorite, 6 Days, 7 Nights, utterly unremarkable rom-com in paradise. Yeah, that was the one with Anne Hesh, I think. I didn't see that one. Anyway, and then I got a couple other people who extolled the underrated virtues of Mosquito Coast. I know that was a film that was pretty widely panned that I've never seen. So you want to weigh in on Harrison Ford? We'd love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Certainly one of the great leading men of the 80s and 90s, I think you would have to say. I wasn't crazy about Air Force One. And I didn't like his run as Jack Ryan. Believe it or not, I actually preferred in the Tom Clancy Patriot Games film series, I actually preferred Alec Baldwin, believe it or not. Anyway, checking sports for last night. The All-Star game, once again, going to the American League, 4-2. You know, it's remarkable, really, when you consider how All-Star games play out. You would think there would be more balance, but 20 years now, over the last 20, I was checking this out this morning, the American League has won 16 of the 20, last 20 All-Star games. You had a brief three-game winning streak by the National League back a number of years ago. And, of course, there was the one tie. So the American League, 16-3-1 in the last 20 All-Star games. And, of course, since the tie, and they made the All-Star game the governing and deciding factor on which league representative in the World Series gets home field advantage, I just think it's fascinating that the American League continues to dominate. If you've got a thought on that, why that is, if you've got a theory, we'd love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I didn't get a chance to see I listened to part of the All-Star game last night driving back from beautiful Hazard, Kentucky, but didn't get a chance to see it. One other little interesting sports note. Cleveland Police Union threatens not to work Browns games. This is a story from NBC Sports. The Browns don't believe it's good enough for running back Isaiah Crowell to simply apologize for posting on social media an image of an attack on a police officer. The union that represents Cleveland's police officers agree. Stephen Loomis, who's the president of the Cleveland Police Patrolmen's Association, called Crowell's gesture a store-bought apology. In comments to TMZ, Loomis also described Crowell's post as being as offensive as putting a picture of historical African-American men being hung from a tree in the 60s. Loomis has a specific suggestion for what Crowell needs to do next. He needs to go to Dallas, help the families who lost their loved ones last week, write them a check, look them in the eye, and give a heartfelt apology. If Crowell doesn't, Loomis says, there will be consequences. I will pull Cleveland officers, sheriffs, state troopers out of First Energy Stadium this season if he doesn't make it right. You're a grown man, and you claim you were too emotional to know it was wrong. Think we'll accept your apology? Kiss my blank. Well, don't mince words there, Mr. Loomis. The Browns have not cut Crowell, it says, presumably because they value his football skills. If the team is going to keep him, it would be wise for the Browns to encourage him to do what Loomis has requested. So we'll keep an eye on this story as it unfolds. Man, what a shame. Anyway, let's get to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We need something a little bit lighthearted. Spanning the globe, go dumb or go home. As you imagine, with tensions as they are in this country, people very upset and writing their letters of protest. Evidently, they got one group of protesters, letter writers, email senders, got the state wrong. I guess police in now St. Anthony, Idaho, receiving angry messages intended to protest the killing of a black man in Minnesota, in St. Anthony, Minnesota. So people might need to do a little bit better job of, you know, checking their geography and state abbreviations or whatever when they're going to send an email in protesting. Evidently, they're getting inundated in St. Anthony with these kind of things. Our second nominee, driver in Tesla autopilot accent, would buy another Tesla. You know, there's been a lot of talk about self-driving cars and all the rest, of which I remain fairly skeptical. I don't know that I would have that much trust, but evidently a Tesla Model X crashed while in autopilot mode over the weekend in Montana, but the owner says he'd buy another Tesla. Now, listen to this story. The owner, who would only identify himself by his last name, said he's not sure whether the accident was the car's fault or his fault. He said he's eager to talk to Tesla and learn why the car swerved off a narrow Montana road. Evidently, Pang was heading from Seattle to Yellowstone when he crashed on a two-lane highway near Cardwell at 12:30 a.m. Saturday, said Montana State Trooper Jade Shope. It's a winding road going through a canyon with no shoulder. Well, Mr. Pang, with all due respect, if you're going to test out the self-driving autopilot mode of your vehicle, I'm not sure going through a winding canyon road is the way to go. But our winner in the award, again, go dumb or go home. You got to give this guy at least credit for resourcefulness. This in Canada. A police officer had set up radar. He saw what looked like a bicycle light heading northbound on Gordon Street. But as he approached, the officer realized the light was coming from inside a motor vehicle. The vehicle was speeding. The guy had no working headlights, but he did have a headlamp strapped to his head while he drove. Now, that's resourcefulness. That's our winner of the What Were You Thinking Award. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour. Back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media, this digital enterprise, which we're seeking to share the good news about Jesus Christ and his resurrection power, his love and hope, which overcome darkness and evil and suffering and give us a purpose for living. And the church he founded, the fullness of faith upon St. Peter and the apostles, and continuing down through the ages. We do it all for you via digital streaming, apps for your digital device, through podcasting. You can check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. We have contributors from coast to coast. And if you want to get to know some of the other contributors, as I said, just go to our website, breadboxmedia.com. You can read all about it. Go to iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean and get podcasts of the of your favorite program, and you can even subscribe. And as Leo mentioned during the commercial break, you can get exclusive content by being a friend of your favorite show. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, our question of the day, Harrison Ford's birthday today. The man is 74 years old today. What is your favorite Harrison Ford role? Not necessarily your film, but what's the role that he played that you liked the best? And conversely, which one did you like the least? You can call me or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. As I said there in our What Were You Thinking award, that's a... The police pull over this guy for speeding. He has no working headlights. He walks up to the car, and the driver's wearing an LED headlamp on his forehead. That must have been a strong one. But no, it was a single battery-operated headlamp shining through the front windshield that was first observed by the officer. I guess it had the reverse effect. You know, you're used to, if you get pulled over after dark, the officer shines that bright light in your face. I guess when the driver turns to look at the officer outside his window, he gave him a little bit of payback. That's a funny story. Anyway, so comments, we've gotten other comments on Facebook on this Harrison Ford question. Let me see if I could pull those up here. Like I said, one of the great leading men of the 70s and 80s. Chris says he likes Blade Runner and Raiders of the Lost Ark the best. Least favorite, the Sabrina remake. Again, I didn't see that one. I think it had also Julia Ormond in that, whatever happened to her. Best film nobody talks about is Mosquito Coast. And David concurs. Let's see. Abigail says, for favorite, any of the Star Wars, least would be the newer Indiana Jones. That's the one I didn't see. I'm sorry. Shia LaBeouf. Anyway. Ben says, all three Indiana Jones movies, if I don't count the newest. I don't count the newest one, he says. So, if you want to add to the conversation on that, please feel free. Would love to hear from you on that. As I said, memorial services yesterday in Dallas, the presidents, both the previous president, President Bush, and President Obama, who's nearing the end of his term, both speaking, President Obama speaking longer. I'd probably be your only critique of the president's speech is that, yeah, it perhaps was a little longer than it needed to be. But in terms of hitting on an appropriate tone and theme, you're threading a pretty difficult needle in that situation. I thought he did a fine job. And like I said, particularly enjoyed the fact that he quoted from Scripture explicitly. He allowed the Scripture and the ideas in Scripture to become sort of the vocabulary of the text. And I think some of the great orations in this nation's history have done that very thing. So I thought it was well done. Well done by all involved. Now we just have to continue on in this path of seeking to live out the principles that we espouse. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be the faint of heart. It's not going to be simply words that gets it done. It's going to take all of us. And that's really what the president was trying to get at in his words yesterday, is the mutual responsibility that we each have to acknowledge the tensions that exist, to acknowledge where we've fallen short, and yet to dig down deep in our understanding of this national vision that we have embraced and not always lived up to, but to seek to live up to it. So if you've got a thought on that 5734-BREAD-4, 5734-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Came across a fascinating story yesterday on the National Geographic. Would really like to get the writer of it on the program because I thought it was a fascinating discovery, evidently, of a Philistine graveyard. This is from the National Geographic, published July 10th. An unrivaled discovery on the southern coast of Israel may enable archaeologists to finally unravel the origins of one of the most notorious and enigmatic peoples of the Hebrew Bible, the Philistines. The discovery of a large cemetery outside the walls of ancient Ashkelon, a major city of the Philistines between the 12th and 7th centuries BC, is the first of its kind in the history of archaeological investigation in the region. While more than a century of scholarship has identified the five major cities of the Philistines and artifacts distinctive to their culture, only a handful of burials have been tentatively identified. Simply put, archaeologists have found plenty of pots, but very few people. Well, that's changed now with the discovery of a cemetery that contains more than 211 individuals and dates from the 11th to the 8th centuries. Evidently, there's a lot you can tell about a culture by its burial practices, which underscores that thought that's been expressed before, that if you want to know something about a culture, look at the way it treats its dead. And that'll tell you a lot about the way they view the human person. Anyways, it says, until this discovery, the absence of such cemeteries in major Philistine centers had made researchers' understanding of their burial practices about as accurate as the mythology about George Washington chopping down the cherry tree. That from Lawrence Stagger, professor of archaeology at Harvard University. He goes on to say that the Philistines are among the most notorious villains of the Hebrew Bible. This uncircumcised group, that's in quotes, controlled the coastal region of modern-day southern Israel and the Gaza Strip and warred with their Israelite neighbors, even seizing the Ark of the Covenant. Of course, some of the most famous Philistines, Delilah, who robbed Samson of his strength by cutting his hair, and the giant Goliath, who made King Saul's troops tremble in their tents until David took him down with a slingshot. So it's fascinating. It's an interesting read. I'll post a link to it on the show's Facebook page. It's, again, one of those things. You know, I had Father Frank Brauner on last week. We were talking about the Ark encounter and the way that so oftentimes we mock or belittle those who place any stock in the historical accounts of Scripture. Again, it's very nebulous with the Noah story. Certainly there, I think, is enough evidence in enough cultures of some sort of cataclysmic flood event that makes it much easier to believe in historically. And, you know, but there's a lot of debate, of course, within Christian circles and within Jewish circles about what is the historical accuracy of the Noah account. But let me just say this. Dismiss the historicity of Scripture at your peril. Because sure enough, something will come along that will embarrass you. There, I was talking to Father Frank about, you know, there for a long time, historians, archaeologists laughed at the idea of a Hittite empire, because the only source that mentioned a Hittite empire was the Old Testament. If you remember Uriah the Hittite, the husband of Bathsheba. And archaeologists mocked the Scriptures on that account until, lo and behold, archaeologists discovered, wait for it, the Hittite Empire. And there have been countless cases like this throughout the history of archaeology. So, again, Scriptures, the biblical writers were not writing as historians in the modern sense of the term with our particular criterion of historical accuracy. But dismiss it at your peril. I mean, here they've got Ashkelon. They've got these Philistine settlements. Scripture, of course, replete with reference to the Philistines. All right, let's see if we can sneak in some history here since we're talking archaeology on this day, July 13th, throughout the ages. What are some other things that happened? 1821, Nathan Bedford Forrest was born. He was a notorious slave trader and Confederate general and KKK Grand Wizard. Of course, great-great-great-grandfather of Forrest Gump. 1863, rioting against a Civil War military draft erupted in New York City. About 1,000 people died over 3 days. Huh. But that the basis of the film, The Gangs of New York, I think. 1865, Horace Greeley reputedly advised his readers to go west, young man. This is the anniversary of the Hollywood sign, officially dedicated in 1923. It originally read Hollywoodland. The last four letters dropped in 1949. 1960, the U.S. Democratic Convention nominated John F. Kennedy as its presidential candidate, only the second Catholic ever nominated, the first, of course, to be elected. And in 1976, 40 years ago, the All-Star Most Valuable Player, George Foster, one of, gosh, what, four or five Cincinnati Reds in the 70s who were All-Star Game MVPs. Looking at the Reds at the bottom of the standings, that brings back good memories. We'll be back with more in just a minute here on the Mike Allen Show. Don't go anywhere. 573-4-BREAD-4. If you've got a comment, you're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Wednesday, July 13th. Love to hear from you. 573-4-BREAD-4. If you want to chime in, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text that number, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Again, our question of the day, Harrison Ford's 74th birthday. What is your favorite Harrison Ford role in a film? And what would be your least favorite Harrison Ford role? He's made a lot of great movies, a few clunkers. I mean, even the best stars have done that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Back to this Philistines story. Again, this is another from another source, NPR. Talks about one of the things that they've discovered in this cemetery of Philistines they found in the ancient city of Ashkelon were small vials of perfume that had been laid near the bodies, at least presumably so that the deceased could smell perfume throughout eternity. They also have found among the remains arrowheads, bracelets, and earrings. One particular scholar, Daniel Master, who's the co-director of the expedition, so this forms a baseline for what Philistine is. We can already say that the cultural practices we see here are substantially different from the Canaanites and the Highlanders in the East. What I thought was pretty fascinating at the very end here, Master told National Geographic, from our standpoint, the excavation is the first chapter of the story. I've been at Ashkelon for 25 years, and I guess it's just the beginning. You know, the work of an archaeologist. You talk about something that is far different than it has been glamorized to be in cinema. Speaking of Harrison Ford, for example, the Indiana Jones movies, the work of the vast 99.9% of archaeologists is not about car chases and closing your eyes when the Ark of the Covenant is opened. It is about that sort of diligent, painstaking, day by day of persistence until you hope maybe once after 25 years to have some sort of eureka moment. It's impressive virtue in those archaeologists and anthropologists who do this kind of work. So that'll be really fascinating to see what kind of things they discover. And I predict they'll find a great sense of compatibility with what they find archaeologically and what the witness of Scripture is. A big story out of Rome here recently is that Father Federico Lombardi, the papal spokesperson, the Holy See's chief spokesman, who has been in that role for about 10 years, will be stepping down. In a statement, the Vatican said Father Lombardi, who will turn 74 at the end of August, will be stepping down next month. There we go. A position he began 10 years ago today on July 11th, 2006. So this story from a couple days ago. And they've tapped U.S. journalist and former National Catholic Register Rome correspondent Greg Burke, so an American, to replace him. I've joked about Father Federico Lombardi that, he's probably raised the stock price of Maalox on his own during the Francis papacy. Well, it all started with the remarks that Pope Benedict made at his Regensburg address that created quite a stir in the Muslim world. But that was just practice for all these plane interviews that Pope Francis has given. You know, it's something when if you were to say to somebody, what do you think of Pope Francis' controversial remarks on the airplane? And people would say to you, which ones are you talking about? Pope Francis, much more freewheeling than the more Germanic and exact Pope Benedict. So Pope Francis always saying things that create a stir and then have to be explained. I've always said about Father Federico Lombardi, it'd be interesting to see a pic, just like they do with presidents. You see a photo of them on the inauguration day, and you see a photo of them when they leave office, the aging that takes place. It might be interesting to see what's happened with Father Lombardi over 10 years, or at least over the last 3.5 years of explaining what Pope Francis has said. Now Greg Burke gets that opportunity. He's actually a member of Opus Dei, a numerary. He's 56 years old. He told the Register that he was humbled, honored, and really excited at the appointment by Pope Francis, especially coming at a time when all Vatican communications are being overhauled and undergo significant reform. According to Greg Burke, the purpose of my work is very clear: to serve the Pope. Pope Francis had said he prayed on this appointment. Burke recounted his meeting with the Holy Father. Now, that'd be a job interview. My goodness. Although the appointment was not unexpected, the Missouri native later told Catholic News Agency it was an honor to have been given this trust of the Pope. It's a long list of virtues, so I hope to pick up part of that. He also paid tribute to Father Lombardi. He said he had the privilege of working with the Jesuit spokesman for 4 years. I don't think I knew Lombardi was Jesuit. That he hopes to have learned some of his patience, his calm, and his absolute dedication. I'd watch him work from 8:30 in the morning until 8:30 at night. Father Lombardi's had to deal with many communication crises as Vatican spokesman during an age of instantaneous news. As it says, the first being the media fallout from Pope Benedict's Regensburg lecture in September of 2006. Wow, he hadn't been on the job at, 2 months at that point? More recently, he's had to clarify some of Pope Francis' controversial interviews and off-the-cuff remarks. So I think it's good that he's going to have an American. I think Americans, by and large, have more of an understanding of the impact in this current culture of instantaneous media. And I think there have been some communication struggles at times with the Holy See. Maybe at times a tone deafness to how things are being perceived. So I think Greg Burke will be a great addition to the role there. One quality he hopes to bring is the ability to work as part of a team, he says. All good communication is teamwork, and fortunately I spent my career in two places where that was highly valued, which includes his reference to his time at Time magazine. So let's see, anyway, Burke appreciated the fact that, like him, Garcia, this is Garcia Ovejero, who will be appointed as his assistant. They will take their new positions on October 1st. It says he appreciated the fact that, like him, Garcia is a layperson, and he welcomed that she has been plucked straight from the Vatican press corps and her Spanish nationality. The word of the day is international, and that's very positive. So we'll see. I think it says a lot. It must say a lot about Greg Burke that Pope Francis would tap him for that position. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Last thing, I went last night, as I told you, to meet with some folks at a Catholic church in Hazard, Kentucky. Hazard, of course, a small eastern Kentucky town. It is a county with very few Catholics, as most eastern Kentucky Appalachian counties are, and many of them less than 0.5%. Some of the counties have no Catholic parish at all. Had a really good conversation with them about evangelization. I think it's important to have these conversations. One of the reasons we're doing this as a part of my full-time work with the Diocese of Lexington as the Director of Evangelization is just to get a better feel for what's already happening and being done on the topic of evangelization. One of the issues that came up in our discussion is that there are a whole lot of different ways to interpret the term evangelization, right? Some people hear that word and automatically think it assumes door-to-door visitation, street preaching, whatever. But as the argument was being made last night, we evangelize in a lot of ways. And we don't need to set up this false dichotomy between verbal sharing of the faith and the bringing of the good news to people's physical needs, for example, or working for social justice and all the rest. And I get that, and I agree with that. The quote attributed again last night that sometimes connected to St. Francis, even though there's little evidence he actually said it, preach the gospel at all times, when necessary, use words. At the same time, I think we have to use words. Because it's the caring for the poor, the working for social justice, the meeting people's temporal needs is important. It authenticates who we are. We don't do it as a precondition of their conversion or any sort of things or some sort of a manipulative tool. That is wrong and a counterfeit expression of mercy. At the same time, I think we are assuming a lot if we think people are just going to somehow intuitively get why we do it. I think our witness has to be articulated with words. And I want to talk about this a little bit later in the program, the importance of evangelization in a day in which, quite frankly, the Catholic Church is in decline in the West. And we could use more speaking up about our faith, not simply in propositional arguments, but an honest sharing of the love that we have discovered that has changed us. People are dying for some hope these days. We have a word to share. We'll be back with more with a new hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.